Good morning, everyone, and welcome. Today we're going to be reviewing the EIM Greenhouse Gas Enhancements Draft Final Proposal. The proposal was posted on June 24th on our website, as well as this presentation. We posted it yesterday. You'll go to the Stay Informed tab, select Stakeholder Processes, and you'll see the it's actually listed under the Regional Integration and EIM Greenhouse Gas Compliance Initiative. My name is Christina Osborne. I work in customer service, and I'm going to be facilitating the web conference. Don Trethway is actually our primary presenter, and he's going to go over the proposed GHG market design changes that are discussed in the proposal. So that'll be pretty much the conversation for today. We are planning to take an hour break for lunch around noon, and then we'll go over the next steps for this initiative. So as I mentioned, we are in the draft final proposal phase of the stakeholder process. And so, actually, Don, in the next slide, is just going to kind of review the timeline for the remainder of this initiative. So we will be taking questions throughout the day in the room. If you have a question, just raise your hand. If you're on the phone, you can press #2. And we just like to remind people to introduce themselves before asking their question. So with that, I'll turn it over to Don.
Good morning, everybody. So this is going to be a little bit of a different process than we usually do. Usually we get the draft final proposal and we are prepared to go to the board, but for this initiative we actually want to do some additional analysis on the proposed solution. One, to look at the accuracy of the attribution as well as looking at the potential impacts to the pricing algorithm as well. So we are currently developing the software enhancements necessary to perform the two-pass solution. We will be putting that in as part of the fall release so that we can, again, do the analytics around it. We will, in July, brief both the EIM governing body and the ISO Board of Governors on the two-pass solution in terms of how it works, the solution, the problems that we're solving, and that we will be coming back to them with a report and a decision. A report at the end of this year, and then a decisional item in Q1 2018, assuming everything goes great in terms of the analysis. And then we would activate the software, and that's sort of a typo in terms of that it's in fall of 2019. It was actually for the CARB compliance year 2019, so we would put it in place the end of 2018 for a go-live date of January 1st. And that allows us time to make any necessary to coordinate with CARB to make any necessary changes they need to their regulation to support the two-pass solution. Questions?
Kevin Woodruff, consultant for TURN. So the go live date for the software would be 1/1/19. Okay, just to be clear.
Yeah. Okay. So what we wanted to do today is since it's been a while since we've gotten together, we were going to go through sort of the background of the issues that was identified and how we came up with the two-path solution and walk through several examples and then talk about the concept of California supply a little more detail. So in terms of the problem, and then here I wanted to highlight that we had previously combined this, both the EIM enhancements as well as the regionalization enhancements. And I wanted to highlight that these enhancements are applicable to both the EIM and the regional integration. And so the concept of California supply applies to both. And really all regional integration does is now extend this process that we're currently, the two-step process that we're doing in the real time, to the day-ahead market and introduces a couple other items that we need to address. But we aren't planning to take on any of the additional design elements associated with regionalization until we expand the current balancing authority area. Those two items that you need to address once you extend this to the day-ahead market, the concept of that the ISO is California needs to change, and what that results in is that all imports and exports are really not considered part of any state's greenhouse gas program. And as a result, the imports would always have a GHG bid. Currently, within the ISO, all imports embed their GHG costs within their energy bids. But under a larger balancing authority area, we would now wouldn't be able to know whether an import to that larger balancing authority area would go to California load or to non-California load, and the only way that you can determine that is if you have to pull out the GHG costs and do that as a separate bid component. And then lastly, with regards to convergence bids, we need to recognize how we would treat those, and the key there is that they wouldn't bid a separate GHG bid. They would be assumed to be within the GHG program where they were physically bidding. So we've included these additional design changes that you would need once you extended it the day ahead and addressed a larger balancing authority area. But again, we don't plan to implement that with in time for 2019. Any questions on that, Wei?
Wei from AC, just from the process. So this time you're proposing to only implement the EIM, but you put maybe two additional design elements out there. Do you want the comments on both pieces or just on the EIM?
So I think for efficiency purposes, please provide comments on those two other design items. I think that way, if we did have a stakeholder process to extend this to the day ahead time frame, we've pretty much knocked out all of the main changes that you would need to make. And that, so it'd be a relatively quick process from a stakeholder standpoint, since we've already got most of your inputs on it. And it would just be a sort of a finalization and getting a board approval to extend this to the day ahead market with these two additional features. Okay. So in terms of the changes from the straw proposal, the first is we had this concept of California supply. Again, this is supply that is contracted with or is being purchased by a California load serving entity to serve California load. And so we need some way to distinguish that from other external resources. And we'll go through more details on that. So we had previously had the California supply be sort of a master file type change. You would set up this resource in master file, which means you can update it every, basically it takes, 5 to 10 business days to update it. And we believe that actually we need to have more flexibility, and so we've made it into a biddable parameter so that they would identify, the scheduling coordinator would select the flag, and then it would be considered California supply on an hourly basis. And then we also discussed in more detail how we treat California supply in the two-pass optimization, where California supply in the first pass can actually be attributed to come to California. And in the second pass, it also can be attributed coming to California. We do, however, restrict it to be incremental to its base schedule to address a second issue around the potential double counting. And again, we'll get into more details of this later in the day. So now we'll sort of lay the foundation. We've walked through this material before, but I think it's good just to get everybody back up to speed. So on our current EIM design, EIM participating resources bid a separate GHG bid and a megawatt quantity expressing their willingness to be attributed to come to California. And that the amount that can be attributed to come to California is only limited by the megawatt bid and the actual dispatch. So if the resource bid 50 megawatts could be attributed to California, but it was only dispatched to 40 megawatts, then only 40 megawatts could actually be attributed. But there is no restriction in terms of where whether or not that 40 megawatts is part of the base schedule that they had, hourly base schedule that they had submitted. And when we then run the market, we basically redispatch and determine the least cost dispatch across the entire EIM footprint to serve everything. So the EIM load, participating resources that don't have a GHG bid, because again, you can voluntarily opt out by submitting 0 megawatts as your GHG bid. That's also the default provisions. We then also optimize across the EIM with the participating resources that have a GHG bid, ISO loads and ISO resources, and we redispatch the entire system. We're not doing an incremental dispatch. We determine the optimal solution, taking into consideration all of these with load inside California, you know, and making the determinations that a resource participating resource outside of California, you know, we would consider its energy and GHG bid when determining whether it would serve California. But if that resource was serving load outside of California, you would only consider its energy bid. Okay? So when we extended the EIM, we basically are using the same real-time market that the ISO previously had. We had to make some adjustments, such as the GHG design, to support that. And again, this is just to further reiterate that we're not doing an incremental optimization. So again, we dispatch every single resource in the combined footprint. We balance total supply and total demand. And we do all of this by minimizing total cost while resolving congestion. And there is no assumption or belief that the base schedules are optimal. The base schedules don't figure into the optimization currently. So the baseline from which we determine whether or not a resource can be attributed to California is zero. So under that design, there have been some observations that the least cost dispatch will have the effect of sending the low emitting resource to the ISO while not recognizing that potentially there was a secondary dispatch or a backfill dispatch from an emitting resource. And also, so in that case, the atmospheric effect of serving California load may be more accurately reflected in that incremental emitting resource, not the attributed resource, and that was a concern that ARB had. But it's also important to recognize that the least cost dispatch can also reduce overall carbon across the EIM footprint when, rather than curtailing non-emitting resources in the ISO, we're able to reduce the level of emitting resources outside the ISO. But there is no mechanism under the CARB rules to sort of credit this avoided curtailment of renewables. So we have been working with CARB to address the concerns with the secondary dispatch, and we'll show how that can occur in upcoming slides. We have received comments from CARB that we posted to our website expressing support for moving forward with the two-pass solution and the reporting report that we'll put out at the end of the year. And again, we continue to coordinate closely with them so that we are ensure that our two processes from a regulatory standpoint are aligned. So what does it mean when the atmospheric effect that of the dispatch doesn't really reflect what truly the result of serving California load caused? And the key is it's not necessarily always apparent when there's an attribution to the base schedule. And that's because those base schedules are not optimized within a given EIM entity balancing authority area, and they're definitely not optimized across all of the balancing authority areas in the EIM outside of the ISO. So if the attributed resource would have generated anyways, then another resource's emissions could be higher. That is an example where if it was going to generate it always, did the increase in California load actually cause that to generate? Probably not. But if the resource would not have generated to serve non-ISO demand, then it is actually the correct atmospheric effect to attribute it to that resource. Are there any questions before I jump into some numerical examples? Okay. All right. So let's go through one example. So we'll use this example numerous times. I've highlighted in red that we changed sort of the various bid prices and PMAX of the resources. We also have a requirement in here that the maximum amount that we can reduce the ISO supply is 200 megawatts. And what we want to show here is basically some various scenarios to determine whether or not there has been a backfill effect and did we correctly capture the right emissions. So in this case, we have a a low-priced, low-emitting resource in PacWest that is currently at its PMAX. So let's see, as we walk through this, whether or not that should be resource should be attributed potentially for attribution to California. So if we solved the EIM market today, we would have, under the current approach, we would see that G3 has been dispatched up 200 megawatts. It then flowed into PacWest, replacing the energy that was previously provided by G1, because the energy from G1 is now coming to California, which results in the energy price being $30 and the GHG price being $0. And so the question is this a result of secondary dispatch or backfill effect? And you can actually see that there was really no change in the output of G1, yet that was the resource that received the attribution. So if we move to it and look at it differently, let's see, sort of break this into sort of the two-path solution and see what would have occurred had we taken the two-path approach. But actually, before I move on, is there any questions on this slide? Okay. So now let's do the sort of the two-path solution. So let's solve for all of the load outside of California first. And as we can see, there wouldn't be any dispatch of G3 because it's already an optimal dispatch across the entire three EIM balancing authority areas. Okay? So when we actually run the second pass, it would be more appropriate to attribute G3 as serving the load in California because that is the resource that actually moved in response to the ISO demand. And as a result, if you did that, the energy price would be $36 and the greenhouse gas price would be $6. So ISO load would be paying $36 and the LMP outside of the ISO would continue to be $30. Whereas in the first starting point of this is you saw that the load price inside California was $30. So in this instance, we've now more accurately attributed the transfer into California to the resource that actually served load in California after we've ensured that all load outside of California has already been met economically. And again, you have to do that first step because there is no assumption that the base schedules are optimal across the footprint. Okay? But as I said before, if we change the economics a little bit and make G1 now more expensive than G3, we will see whether or not we have whether we can attribute to that base schedule. So, and whether we've had an example of a secondary dispatch. So if we solved for the EIM market today, we would see that the price here would be $35 with G1 being marginal. And there is no greenhouse gas price, and we have dispatched G3 moves up from 0 to 200 megawatts. So it looks very similar to what we saw with the previous solution, but this actually isn't an instance of secondary dispatch because the base schedules were not optimal originally. So let's look at it in two steps again. So if we optimize the EIM entity base schedules before, including the ISO, we would see that G1 is more expensive than G3's energy. So G1 at $35 and G3 at $30, you would dispatch G3 up to 200 and just dispatch G1 down to zero. And G1 is the marginal resource because that's the one that can provide the next megawatt of demand. So the energy price is $35. There isn't a GHG price because nothing's coming to California yet. So, but we see here that the economic trade between G1 and G3 does actually provide some now headroom on G1 that you could potentially attribute to California. So let's move through to the the second pass where we now add California back in. Yeah.
Sorry. How is the energy price $35 if you G1 isn't generating anymore?
Because that G1 is who I would get the incremental one if I wanted an additional megawatt of demand.
Oh, okay.
I can't get it from anybody else.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. So now if we utilize those schedules from the previous optimization and say anything incremental to that reference level determined in that first pass can be attributed to California, what is the result? So what we see here is that it is economic to now dispatch G1 back up to 200 megawatts to serve the 200 megawatt imbalance in the ISO. We set the energy price is still $35 and the GHG price is still zero. So as you saw from the original setup of this scenario, from the current optimization gives you exactly the same result as the two-step process. But again, that's only because there wasn't a secondary backfill effect that occurred. Okay, so is there any questions on those? So the key is the reason you need to do the two-path solution is you can't differentiate, you don't know in advance whether it's this scenario or the previous scenario where there was a secondary dispatch. And that's because the base schedules have not been optimized outside of California. See, they don't serve as a good reference point to determine incremental dispatch. Okay.
Karen, we'll go ahead and take the question on the phone.
Hi, good morning, Dawn. It's Mark Holman with PowerX.
Yep.
I think this is a two really helpful examples, and if I can just rephrase it in my wording, and then you can tell me if I've got it right or not. I think in the first example, I think you demonstrated that G3, and let's assume G3 is a gas plant and G1 is a hydro plant, just makes it easier for me to think it through. In the first example, G3 increased its output as a result of EIM transfers to California, serving load in California. And so it is appropriately through the two-path solution being allocated the GHG obligation. Whereas in the second example, I think what you're saying here is even without transfers to California, that gas plant would have increased its production in the EIM to transfer its power to PacWest, reducing its hydro generation. And now when we allow transfers in the second pass to California in the EIM to serve load in California, it's the PacWest hydro generation that is moving up. So it's really about getting the counterfactual case. In other words, what generation would have ran anyways without having EIM transfers to California so that you can then accurately identify the generator that's increasing its production to support those transfers. So I think these are two really good examples if I understand it correctly.
So that is correct, and I think the key is you don't have the ability to know what the correct reference level is until you've actually solved optimally outside of California.
Which is the need for the two paths as opposed to just using the
right.
Submitted base schedules. You're effectively creating modified base schedules that reflect the optimal solution without transfers to California so that you can identify that resource that increases its production to support transfers to California.
Right. While not negatively impacting those economic trade-offs between the balancing authority areas in the EIM, not including California.
Okay, thanks. That was helpful.
Karen, we'll take the next question.
Hi, this is Paul Nelson from Southern California Edison. Can people hear me okay?
Yep.
How are CAISO intertie bids treated in the two-path solution?
So those would be treated as supply with the California balancing authority, ISO balancing authority area. So they're not treated any differently than any internal resource of the ISO.
So So they're then put into the second run.
So no, there. So in the first pass they can serve California load, and in the second pass they can serve California load and, or actually sorry, in the first pass they could actually serve both California load and EIM load, and in the second pass the same thing applies.
Well, in the first pass you exclude California, so in the first pass they can serve then EIM load.
No, but for imports to the California ISO, those have a compliance obligation with CARB, similar to an internal resource. So they embed their GHG costs within their energy bids, just like an internal ISO resource.
Okay.
And at that import to the California Balancing Authority area, subsequently transferred to allowed a transfer to occur out of the ISO to an EIM entity, that would be for economics, and that import would still have a compliance obligation.
So if a clean resource bids at the intertie, then it would get and when it cleared the market, it would be included. That there wouldn't be any secondary dispatch associated with it then in the second run.
The secondary dispatch can only occur within an EIM balancing authority area. You can't have the secondary dispatch. We have no way of tracking or doing anything with that for non-EIM balancing authority areas.
Right. But Malin is an interesting hub.
Dan from Portland General, and that in his example then, just for us, if we are exporting to the ISO on a day-ahead basis, that would just be part of our base schedule, and then EIM transfers would be separate and distinct from that.
Right, and I think that's where you get, you're sort of hitting a little bit on the California supply, and so that's why we assume with the California supply that once you identify it as that, you know, if you had a specific generator serving a day-ahead schedule, that you would have an export out of your balancing authority area equal to your base schedule of that resource, and so we could determine any incremental dispatch off that base schedule and attribute that.
Yep, and we would have picked up the GA
from the import.
With that import.
Right, so if you had a 100-megawatt import to the ISO, you have a 100-megawatt obligation there, and then if we incrementally dispatched you off that base to, let's say, 110 and attributed 10 to your resource, then you would have an additional 10 GHG allocation.
Perfect. Thanks.
Callie.
This is Callie Wells with Rosero Consulting. I actually had a follow-up question to the intertie discussion we just had. Has the ISO given any thought into allowing imports to submit separately energy and GHG? Because today, obviously, we have a multi-state RTO already, and those kind of have a miscellaneous current GHG accounting. So I was just curious if they've thought of any solution to that.
So I don't think you have a solution for that until you move to the full regional solution. As I highlighted, there were two issues that you needed to address to extend this to the day-ahead timeframe, and to change the paradigm in terms, think about it, we're maintaining the existing paradigm of the current design that it's balancing authority area to balancing authority area, which lines nicely to the need to tag EIM transfers and all of that. So we're not making any of that. If you need to make the change to that paradigm in concert with the regionalization solution, where you would treat all imports would have a separate GHG bid, because in a expanded balancing authority area, you wouldn't, let's say Pacific Corp joined, you wouldn't know whether an import at the boundary is serving Oregon or California load unless you do the attribution approach that we have currently designed for the EIM.
Kind of a follow-up to that.
Yeah.
So how much incremental effort would it be to put the regionalization solution in place before it's formally regionalized? Because we do have a multi-state RTO already.
I think it's the changing from the balancing authority area paradigm to individual state boundary paradigms is problematic, given that we're still going to need to tag the transfers between the ISO and the EIM entities at a balancing authority area level. So they're not aligned yet.
Right, done. Dan from Portland General again, and just make sure we've covered this from every angle. So if that resource that was importing previously is dispatched down, we still have the compliance obligation for the full 100 megawatts, correct?
Correct.
Because that was scheduled and tagged.
Correct.
And that's just, so it just stays that way unless we get to what Callie was talking about and had some other program.
If you weren't using the tags as a deemed delivered quantity, correct.
Okay. Thanks.
I think the key there, Dan, is that when you move to the regional solution, everything is attribution.
Right, from SC, just want to clarify. So in the two-step solution, the imports and the exports bids will be optimized as well as all the EIM bids, but just the transfer into the CAISO will be restricted?
So what we'll do is that for EIM participating resources that are not California supply, we will in essence put their GHG bid to 0 megawatts in the first pass, which as a result of not allowing any transfers into California because there's no available resources. And then we would solve using that reference level from the second point, now allowing transfers up to the megawatt quantity that they bid.
Okay, so between the first pass and the second pass, the schedule for imports and exports could be very different as well.
So, George, do you?
Yeah, there are different problems you're solving. So obviously there will be different solutions. But the way you should look at the import and export bids, these are bids at the ISO scheduling points, and they're subject, the imports are subject to greenhouse gas regulation. No different than generators inside California. So as far as import and export bids go, they're treated exactly the same as any bid from a California generator. So the solution in the first pass for imports and exports and also California generators is completely irrelevant. What we're looking for in the first pass is for the optimal solution for EIM resources, for resources outside of California, because we want to find a reference that tells us how these resources would have been dispatched if they were not dispatched to serve California load, but they were solely dispatched to serve non-California load. So the solution for California generators and imports and exports of California is not relevant. We're really looking for the optimal solution of EIM resources because that's the reference for the second pass.
Yeah, I think on a high level I understand the concept, but from optimization, would you have a scenario where say, hey, you got an import into the California and then that import could be wheeled through to export through the California to export to the EIM? What, is that scenario possible in the first pass?
That's possible, and we want to have this in the first pass solution. That's why the first pass really optimizes the entire footprint, because we want to find an optimal solution that if non-California load is served by California exports, we're going to have that in the optimal solution, because then it will give us a better, more accurate determination of the greenhouse gas reference we're looking for. So we want to prevent imports into California, but we're not preventing exports from California to serve non-California load in the first pass.
Could that have an effect to reduce the GHG allocation base in the first run?
So as Don mentioned, we do not consider the greenhouse gas bids of EIM participating resources in the first pass, with the exception of California supply resources. So for simplicity, let's say we don't have California supply resources, essentially we will not consider any greenhouse gas bid in the first pass, so there won't be any imports into California because we won't have an allocation for these imports. We will have nowhere to allocate.
Right.
So essentially the first pass solution will give us the optimal schedule of resources outside California for serving non-California load, not for serving California load. But the California load and the optimal solution for the California load is still part of the overall problem, so we still solve the entire footprint.
Right.
Okay, thanks.
So let me try to add to that. I think it's important when George used the term import, it's important to really distinguish between an import to the ISO balancing authority area and the EIM transfers. So in the first pass, you won't have any EIM transfers into California from EIM participating resources. But as you highlighted, you could have an import with a non-EIM balancing authority area to the ISO that is then subsequently wheeled through and allows a EIM participating resource to be dispatched lower, which provides a lower reference point for when you do the second pass.
Yeah, that's what I tried to codify.
Just so that it's clear, so the first pass you could have will through California. We could also have exports from California. Can you not?
Correct.
Or transfers out.
Correct.
Okay.
Question.
Hi, Dom. This is Kelsey from PacifiCorp. So when we do at PacifiCorp, we'll make a lot of deals ahead of time. We call them term transactions, and those can be retraded, if you will. So we'll take a position, let's say, at the California-Oregon border. We'll make a sale. That can then be resold. Let's say our initial partner was J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan can then do a deal with Southern California Edison. So it can go through multiple party transactions. I mean, I've seen tags where there's 9 counterparties because it has gone through so many different hands, if you will. In that instance, let's say the end result is that it does get imported into California, and it is technically from PacifiCorp and one of our resources, but we would not claim that, I think, in the sense that you've kind of denoted in your example. How would that be treated? Because there is still the possibility of double counting, obviously, in that instance, because J.P. Morgan would have a GHG obligation for potentially like a system sale. And then similarly, if that same resource or if there was a similar export from PacifiCorp, there also the possibility that you would have that double count in that situation.
So we would only attribute to a given scheduling coordinator, not multiple scheduling coordinators.
Right.
So I would expect that the scheduling coordinator that is transacting that as California supply would be the one that turns the flag so that they recognize that it's and so that it's treated appropriately in the first pass.
But doesn't that cause the potential then for double counting?
No, because we wouldn't have attributed to the other resource that didn't have the ability that didn't have the compliance obligation. So I think in your example, J.P. Morgan would have the compliance obligation, not the PacifiCorp resource having the compliance obligation.
It would initially. I agree with you. But then if PacifiCorp, it would have a base schedule effectively associated with that sale. And then in the redispatch or whatever the case may be, if PacifiCorp also made a sale, there would never be that potential?
To understand your example, is this transaction something that clears the day-ahead market?
It's possible. We wouldn't have any control over that at PacifiCorp in that instance, right, because we would be supplying to a specific point.
Okay. So if this transaction clears the day-ahead market, you reflect that in your base schedule, correct?
Correct.
All right. If you have any knowledge of your trading practices at eventually this energy is imported into California and the importer, whoever that is, maybe the bank or whoever other scheduling coordinator, will acquire greenhouse gas responsibility for that import, then you should declare your resource participation in EIM as California supply, because that will prevent you from getting additional greenhouse gas responsibility for your base schedule. If you dispatch above your base schedule, you may have an allocation for the incremental amount, which is quite all right, right? So you concealed your double counting on your greenhouse gas responsibility for your base schedule by declaring it as California supply if you have knowledge that eventually this energy is imported to California.
And I would add that the current design actually has this double counting problem. We talked about this a while ago, that right now we can attribute to the base schedule of any resource that has a GHG bid. And we did have instances where there was concerns that I had, for instance, a renewable resource that I was doing a resource-specific import to California in the day-ahead time frame, and then that resource could potentially be attributed twice, once for its base schedule and once for its actual output of the plant, and that would result in a double compliance obligation given that we attributed to that base schedule that you had already basically sold in the day-ahead time frame. So this actually addresses that concern. The only way that you could have avoided that under the current design is to not bid that resource and bid a zero GHG bid so that it would never be attributed. So I think we've actually solved the double counting versus created a new one. Yep.
Curran will take the first question.
Hi, Don. This is Paul Nelson for Southern California Edison. I just want to clarify, you said in the first pass, California resources are available for the EIM entities as a resource or not? I'm trying to remember.
Correct. So you could have an EIM transfer into California from a California supply resource.
Right. So say that again.
You could have an EIM transfer into California in the first pass, into the ISO in the first pass from California supply because we make available, it's available to serve California load. So it can be attributed above its base schedule.
In the first pass. Wait. I thought right. The first pass you limited the EIM transfer.
Okay. Well, let me clarify, Paul. The first pass ignores the greenhouse gas bids of non-California supply resources. So we still take into consideration greenhouse gas bids for California supply resources. So if there is an attribution based on the optimality on these resources, then you could have imports into California from these California supply resources. The fact that they're designated as California supply resources suggests that there is some contractual agreement between the resource and California load-serving entities for energy from these resources to serve California loads. So we have to allow it in the first pass if it is optimal so that we have a correct calculation again for the greenhouse gas reference to be used in the second pass. If we would not allow that, then energy from these California supply resources could be dispatched in the first pass to serve non-California load, giving you an erroneous reference for the allocation. Is that understood?
Okay, yeah, I understand. Actually, my question was, can California located resources be available for the EIM entities in the first pass, so that you'd have in the first pass in optimization increase or a change so that California resources are then now increasing to serve the EIM entity load in the first pass? That was my question.
Yeah, it depends on the bids and the optimality of the solution. So let's say that if California generators have cheaper bids than California supply resources, then in the first pass the California load will be served by California resources, and perhaps there will be an export from California to EIM balancing authority areas. So the first pass solution allows that. If on the other hand
that backs down a coal resource or emitting resource in the in PAC East, it backs down a coal resource. And that's what set the...
Yes, absolutely, because that's an optimal solution.
Right.
You want to, in the first pass, your objective is to find how the resources are going to be dispatched optimally to serve non-California load without having imports into California from non-California supply resources.
My concern is, due to the complexity of what's being done in the first pass and the second run, could you ever get a possibility that in the second pass, all of a sudden that coal resource in the second pass thing goes back up, then that GHG would be then attributed to California. But in the first pass, California resources actually reduce GHG, but in the second pass, somehow that resource gets increased, and then that would be contributed to California. And would that be appropriate? I'm not even sure if that's feasible, but there's a lot of complexities in the optimizations, and I know there's some differences of what you're trying to do to get increase the speed of these two passes between the first and the second one.
I understand what you're saying. It's potentially possible to have in the first pass an emitting resource not being dispatched because it's cheaper to dispatch other resources. But yet, in the second pass, when the problem is different, perhaps due to congestion management, that resource is dispatched. And once it's dispatched above its reference from the first pass, it may receive a greenhouse gas allocation if it is optimal to serve California load. But that would be the correct solution. This is what you're looking for. You're looking for the correct solution. In that case, the solution is correct. That's what we're looking for.
Is it due to congestion management? So not.
Yeah, as we explained in earlier discussions about the second pass and the first pass solution, the objective is to get a reference for allocation from the first pass so that then when we go in the second pass, we only allocate responsibility, greenhouse gas responsibility, to incremental dispatch above the reference. There are situations, though, that because of congestion management, you may have offsetting dispatches in the EIM balancing authority areas. You may have to dispatch some resources incrementally and some resources decrementally to resolve congestion.
So if that congestion PAC East, and I don't really mean to beat up on PAC East, it's just for example, if that congestion management is in PAC East, which results in increase in GHG, then would it be appropriate to then allocate that to California as being responsible and attributed to California? It's not clear to me that...
Again, it will only... Yeah. So, again, you have to consider the economics. It will only get an allocation for greenhouse gas responsibility if the greenhouse gas bid price from that resource is competitive with other greenhouse gas bid prices from all EIM participating resources. So, depending on that bid price, as I said, it may get an allocation, but that will be the optimal solution. You want to see that. Now, it's unlikely because that emitting resource is competing with all other EIM participating resources, so it's unlikely if it is an emitting resource to receive an allocation for an incremental dispatch that was due to congestion management. Because you're still solving an optimization problem. You're still selecting resources for greenhouse gas responsibility optimally based on the greenhouse gas bid.
Okay,
so we did explain in earlier discussions that the net of the dispatch in EIM balancing authority areas in the second pass, you could potentially have incremental and decremental dispatch because of congestion. And if the net is incremental from the reference, then there will be greenhouse gas allocation for that net incremental dispatch. But there are potentially offsetting dispatches in the EIM balancing authority areas for congestion management.
You know, this goes back to the principle we're doing this because there's this so-called secondary dispatch to serve California load. Well, if this is being done for congestion management and another balancing authority, my fundamental question is, while the economics says this is the cheapest way to resolve this congestion, and I'm not arguing against that, what I am saying is it's not clear to me, given CARB's concerns, this is a secondary dispatch that should be attributable to California load.
And I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if there is dispatch, incremental dispatch for congestion management in an EIM balancing authority area, it will still have to compete with other EIM participating resources to get a greenhouse gas allocation based on the greenhouse gas bid. So just by merely getting an incremental dispatch doesn't mean that you will get a greenhouse gas allocation. It just basically says that you could have a greenhouse gas allocation because you have an incremental dispatch, but you still have to clear the market, compete with all other EIM participating resources in terms of your greenhouse gas bid. We still select the cheapest bids for imports to California.
And you have to have incremental transfer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Dirk, maybe to just hop on that point, this Kelsey from PacifiCorp again. So if the let's say, for example, in your example, the there was no incremental transfers into California. There was simply incremental dispatch within the EIM areas in the secondary dispatch. But I think one of my concerns is that, and let's use the example of the coal plant versus the gas plant, in the first dispatch where the gas plant is less economic than the coal plant, but in the second dispatch where the gas plant is more economic than the coal plant, and if the gas plant gets dispatched in the second dispatch to resolve, let's say, congestion, does that result in an uneconomic dispatch ultimately for PacifiCorp's customers? Because of the fact that the GHG is included in that decision-making process of secondary dispatch to solve for congestion within the PacEast EIM BAA.
No, we have a little bit.
I think
thank you. Your second dispatch is still an optimal solution. You still serve the load in the most economic way. So you weigh in the basic energy bid for serving non-California load, or the energy bid plus the adder from the greenhouse gas bid for serving California load, and you make an optimal selection between the two. So you get the cheapest solution for serving both California load and non-California load. Because we solve the problem for serving optimally the non-California load in the first pass, and we lock that in the reference, that guarantees that when we go in the second pass, you already have the reference for serving your load optimally. Any additional dispatch beyond that may get an allocation for inputs into California, but this is beyond the point of serving your load optimally.
But I thought there was also going to be secondary dispatch for congestion management and other parameters that you might have had to relax in the
sure.
first dispatch. So doesn't that mean, though, that there's also going to be a need to dispatch for other parameters other than just serving California load?
You have to weigh in the two objectives of serving the load optimally and also not violating network constraints. So you find a solution that does both. So on the energy aspect of this, by calculating a reference from the first pass, we guarantee that resources outside of California, they have a set point, a reference for serving the load outside of California optimally.
Thank you.
Considering congestion, but the important thing is that energy-wise, you have a reference. Now, when you go in the second pass, you may have incremental and decremental dispatches for congestion management. You still have an optimal solution. This is still the most optimal way to serve the load.
Across the entire EIM footprint?
Across the entire EIM.
But George, I think the key is it's only the fact when you introduce an EIM, allow the EIM transfer into California, into the ISO, and that creates congestion, could you have the redispatch? Because the first pass has already recognized congestion within the outside of the EIM, outside of the ISO.
So this is Mark. I think, Kelsey, you're maybe confusing some earlier versions of this discussion where we said we may have to do some sacrifices between the step one and the pass one and pass two. I think where we have come to the conclusion is that we don't have to make any sacrifices. We'll be solving effectively the same problem from a congestion management perspective in pass one and pass two, except for the transfers into California. So I think what you were maybe conveying was maybe an earlier thought process that we were somehow ignoring some congestion in one of the passes.
Yes, I guess based on George's point that there may be incremental dispatch related to congestion, that led me to believe that there were still relaxed parameters within the first pass that would have to continue to be solved for in the second pass, but under a different economic paradigm where the GHG price would be included. So I did reach that conclusion. If that's not true, then that is a good step forward. I agree with
you. Yeah, let's make that crystal clear. The second pass is the full market solution that we have today. Nothing is simplified. The second pass is a full market solution. All constraints are in place, okay? The only thing that we do in the second pass is we introduce an input for the greenhouse gas reference point of resources outside California, so that when we do an optimal allocation for greenhouse gas responsibility, we only do that allocation on incremental dispatch amounts above that reference. But the entire problem is still the same. We're still solving the full problem with all its constraints.
Is there any other lags? Are you anticipating any lags between the first and second pass in terms of any changes in variable resource forecast, load forecast, those types of things, or would they happen with the same information?
All other inputs are the same. The difference is your commitment. Okay? We do a full unit commitment in the second pass. It's the full problem, the full market problem. In the first pass, to do it quickly, okay, as part of the simplification that we wanted to introduce for the first pass, we will be using the market power mitigation pass commitment. So we won't be doing a full commitment problem for the first pass, okay? But the second pass has a full unit commitment. It's the full problem.
Karen, we'll go ahead and move on to the next question.
Yeah, this is Mo with APS. I have a question. Are you suggesting that in the first pass you're excluding all the IM entities that have resources outside California and that does not have GSG adders like wind and solar, for example? And if that's the case, when would those be included? In the second pass, it didn't sound like it.
So in the first pass, we include all resources with the restriction that any EIM participating resource that is non-California supply, let's say it submitted a GHG megawatt bid, we would consider that at zero in the first pass. And then in the second pass, we would then, all of those are eligible to, when we dispatch that, those can be attributed to come to California.
And the reason for that is to prevent in the first pass any import to California attribution to non-California resources, non-California supply resources, because we want these resources to be dispatched for serving non-California load so that we can get a reference for them, right?
Understood. So the second pass would include the resources outside California that have no GSG adders, or it doesn't matter whether it's...
So all the resources are available to both passes, okay? There's no exclusion of resources in any pass. Both passes are a full optimization of the entire footprint. The only difference, again, is that in the first pass, we ignore the greenhouse gas bid from non-California supply resources. But they will still be dispatched for serving non-California load. So they're still part of the solution, okay?
Does that answer your question?
So George just said not the greenhouse bid. What if the resources do not have greenhouse bid?
Oh, that's simple. Resources that do not have a greenhouse gas bid, these are resources that they do not want to get a greenhouse gas responsibility for imports into California, and they will never get an allocation. They're in both passes, and in both passes their energy will be used to serve non-California load. So there's no issue with these resources. What we're trying to do is find a reference, a greenhouse gas reference, for the resources that do submit a greenhouse gas bid, and we want to find out first how would these resources would be dispatched for serving non-California load optimally first to get a reference. And then, in the second pass, to see if any incremental dispatch from these resources would get an attribution for imports into California and a greenhouse gas responsibility accordingly. Okay?
Well, let me put it for you a different way. APS owns 100 megawatts of solar facility in Arizona, and we wish to bid that into California. as an EIM entity with no GSG adder, would that go, would that pass the muster for the first pass?
As I mentioned before, if you don't have a greenhouse gas bid, you will not get a greenhouse gas allocation in the first or in the second pass. So the only way to have an attribution with, for imports into California from any resource that participates is to submit a greenhouse gas bid. Without a greenhouse gas bid, you will not get that attribution.
I think this is Mark. I think you're talking past each other because I think Mo is talking about a resource that has, he wants to be able to come to California, if I'm not mistaken, Mo, but it would have a GHG bid of zero.
That's different.
That's different than no GHG bid. So let's be clear about what we're saying.
No, so I think the example he had was he had a 100-megawatt resource. Let's say that he bid 100 megawatts of GHG. His cost-based cap is zero, so he bid 100 megawatts at zero.
That's right.
So if that was the resource, and let's say, and so you're willing to have it delivered to California, and let's assume you didn't have a base schedule or anything, then in the first pass we would, and let's assume you were bidding at zero for energy as well. You would see that that would most likely serve non-California supply first because it's more economic than, for instance, a resource that has a fuel cost externally. So we would, in the first pass, recognize that it is economically optimal to fully schedule that solar resource so that we can back down a gas resource in another EIM balancing authority area, not including the ISO. And in that case, your GHG allocation base from the first pass would be equal to the forecast there, forecast you had. And when we move to the second step, the second pass, your reference point is that first pass, which is your forecast, which means that you would not be eligible to be attributed to supporting an incremental transfer into the ISO because you're already serving non-California load.
And this is exactly the examples that Don showed regarding G1. So the two scenarios have to do with how high or how low is the energy bid of G1. If you look at these examples, the greenhouse gas bid price is $0. So you can say this is a non-emitting resource like the solar resource in your example. If the bid is economic for serving non-California load, which is the first example that Don had, then in the first pass, this resource will be dispatched to serve non-California load. It will not get an attribution for inputs into California. And then in the second pass, it will not get an attribution to inputs into California because it's already, it's dispatched at the reference level. I assume it's dispatched fully. And this is the desired outcome here. We wanted to make sure that we don't give an attribution to resources outside California just because they have a very low or zero greenhouse gas bid. We want to make sure first that they serve non-California load if they're economic, and then on top of that, get an attribution for potential imports into California. So the second example, Don changed the bid, made it more expensive. So now in the first pass, it's not selected to serve non-California load. Okay, so it has a reference of zero. But in the second pass, it's competitive for serving California load because it has a zero greenhouse gas bid adder, and the bids in California in the example are higher. So now in the second scenario, this resource is actually going to get an attribution for inputs into California from the second pass. So it really depends on the economics, on the bids.
All right, thanks.
Okay, one more question on the phone.
So Corinne, we'll move on to the next question.
Hi, it's Mark Holman with PowerX. Hi, Don and George.
Just a couple of thoughts. One is on the last few calls, I think one way I like to think of it that might be helpful is that, if I've got this right, the second pass is the full optimization pass. It is seeking to, all resources are available, it's seeking to serve load at least costs outside of California without considering GHG costs, appropriately so, and it's seeking to serve load inside California through EIM transfers at least costs, including GHG, just like it does today, with one exception, that it includes a constraint, and that constraint comes from the first pass, and the first pass is just trying to identify which resources would have ran anyways without transfers to California, so that the second binding dispatch, which is a full optimization, doesn't inaccurately deem those resources as supporting transfers to California because they would have ran anyways. So the second pass I think of as that's the full binding optimization. It includes congestion. It includes serving load at least cost. It gives you physical dispatches. It generates prices. It is the full solution. But it needs the information from the first pass to say when you're calculating that solution, don't deem a resource as supporting an EIM transfer to serve California load if that resource would have ran anyways to serve load outside. And so that to me is if I have it correctly, the sole purpose of the first pass is to try to establish those resources that would have ran anyways.
So I think the key is under the current design, we'd assume the reference level for all EIM participating resources is zero.
Yes.
And as we saw, that assumption can result in the secondary dispatcher not accurately reflecting the atmospheric effect.
I think when we initially
started discussing about this problem, everyone was like, oh, it's pretty straightforward. You can use the base schedules as that reference point. So if I see a dispatch above the base schedule, that had to have served California. And I think if there was never a dispatch above the base schedule, that couldn't have ever served California. And I think we've shown through these examples that you can't actually make that assumption. So you need to find some way to determine what the right reference schedule or reference point that isn't zero to use, and that's the purpose of the first pass.
Yes, and I think that was really helpful. I think your examples are really helpful because I think they help show that you are trying to accurately identify what would have happened without EIM transfers to California, and those resources that would have been running shouldn't be available in the full binding second pass to be deemed to go to California because they would have run anyways. And I think it does. I think the algorithm that you've designed and that you're showing in these two paths does a good job of that. If I can just shift back to a couple calls ago, I think it touched on a topic of the issue of double counting and the GHG allocation base for California supply. And I think it was an example of PacifiCorp and JP Morgan. And I think the concept you have makes a lot of sense to us, but I'm not sure that a flag is the right way. I'm wondering whether it should be a quantity and maybe as an example, if an entity has, let's say, 500 megawatts of non-EIM transfers to California, so let's say they have day-ahead schedules to California, I think what you may want to consider is having the ability to identify the resources and the specific quantity that matches that and ensure it matches that. So if an EIM entity has, in the example, 500 megawatts of schedules going to California in the day-ahead market, identifying the 500 megawatts of output in the base scheduled resources that is supporting that transfer and making sure it reconciles at an aggregate level. And that's going to, I think, identify both the issues in the paper as well as the double counting issue that was raised kind of with the PacifiCorp JP Morgan case, because then that 500 megawatts will be in that GHG base. It won't be available to be deemed in the EIM algorithm, and appropriately so, because it's already being claimed to support the day-ahead schedules. And so I'm not sure that a flag does it. I think you might want to consider going towards specifying a quantity that supports non-EIM California imports by EIM resource and making sure that reconciles.
Yes, Mark. You're right. The reference that we assume right now for at least as part of the proposal for California supply resources is the base schedule. But what you're saying is it could be a portion of the base schedule. In the base schedule, you could be reflecting energy that contractually serving California load or has cleared the day-ahead market to serve California load, but may also reflect a portion that is contractually serving non-California load, and having an additional specification for the reference instead of just the base schedule would enhance the proposal in that respect.
And I think, George, it's on both sides, so you're correct on the one side, but let me give an example of a 1,000-megawatt unit. And in the day-ahead market, 500 megawatts has been sold to California and delivered as a specified or unspecified import. 300 megawatts has been sold elsewhere, outside of the California. You really want to have that 500 megawatts available to be deemed. You don't want to have it 300 because or 200 because then you could end up with 500 counted and you could end up being deemed a second time. But you also don't want it too high and be the whole output because some of that output might have already been scheduled elsewhere. And so I think you really need to have a value so that it's not too high or too low with what specifically is supporting imports into California outside the EIM. And that will ensure no double counting. It will also ensure that you're not preventing a resource's additional output from being deemed to go to the EIM because you can still deem the amount above that initial 500 import level, if that's the right outcome given your two-pass solution.
So I think we'll need to noodle on that. I think the one issue I see with it is that currently we don't have any information provided by EIM entities that reflects what resource is tied to which specific imports into California. So we just have the aggregate information, not at a resource-specific level.
And I appreciate that, and I know it's something you have to think through and consider. And just to be clear, I'm not suggesting it at a specific level. All I'm suggesting is saying if that EIM entity in aggregate has 800 megawatts of transfers to California in aggregate, it needs to identify in aggregate 800 megawatts of base scheduled supply to support those non-EIM transfers. It doesn't need to get down into the details of which resource supporting which import. I think that's more complex than it needs to be and a big lift for you guys. I think that if you just had, instead of a flag, you just said, what are your total transfers to California non-EIM on your resources, you should be able to flag that much quantity to match that. And you can do it on whatever resources are supporting those imports. But that way you fully enable the ability to allocate the additional range of the resource to supporting California imports in the EIM, but you don't open up the double counting by having someone allocate less than what their day-ahead imports, as an example, are, and then have it deemed to go to California, even though it's also supporting a day-ahead import. So, again, it's an aggregate concept. Happy to talk about it further, but I think it might need to be a value, not just a flag.
Yeah, Mark, I fully understand what you're proposing. It has to be on the resource level, not aggregate, because we do the allocation on the resource level, but it's doable. In fact, yeah, it has to be on the resource level because that's what the participation and the bids are and the selection. But it's not a problem. I think we can do it on the resource level. This is something that actually I thought of earlier. I don't remember now why I did not put that in. I don't remember if it was a simplification part on my part or whether I ran into some complexity. I think I considered it earlier on. It has to do with the fact that some bids come through cyber, whereas the base schedules come through BSAP, and there was some issue trying to do cross-validation across systems, but I can look back into that. For the initial implementation that we plan to have in parallel operations for observing it and producing reports, I don't think it's an essential element. When we're ready to move that into production, this is a feature that I'm going to look into.
And I think that's great. And I think both the two-pass concept as well as this piece of having to identify California supply, I think are very important concepts that I believe are getting you to the right price, the right place. Thank you.
Just one question. Sorry, George, just to add to that a little bit and maybe to add on to the PowerX point. So this is PacifiCorp. So we don't We don't do resource-specific sales. We do system sales. And similarly, even the renewable deals that we have done with California, they actually have a list of renewable resources that could be supplying that energy at any given time. So we don't do, it would be very difficult for us or almost impossible for us to actually identify a specific resource that delivered that contract value.
That
is something to think about, I guess.
No, I can tell you right now I will disappoint you because the EIM works on a resource-specific level. We do resource dispatches, resource settlement, resource LMPs, so we don't have portfolio concepts. So an aggregate contract out of multiple resources that could be designated as California supply has to be specified at the resource level for this to work. We can talk offline if you want to explain it more.
So and I get it on EIM, but in terms of like day ahead, for example, if we make a sale to California, I believe we can choose to do a, what is it called?
You can be resource specific or a non-specified source.
Right, unspecified source.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's fine.
And so in that instance, I guess, are you expecting the EIM entity to actually
Not for the day ahead schedule, but when you come in real time, you have to meet that through base schedules, and the base schedule is at the resource level. So at some point, when you submit the base schedules for the resources, and these base schedules support those day ahead commitments,
mm-hmm.
you have to make some allocation and say that, because the base schedule is resource specific. And
but we don't designate a specific resource that we're using to serve that transfer on a day-ahead basis.
What I'm trying to say is that we don't
designate a resource for that
right,
either.
Right, but EIM works with resource dispatches, so if you want to make this work, this information has to be at the resource level. So eventually there has to be some attribution of which resource-based schedule supports the day-ahead imports to California that clear the day-ahead market.
And that's not unique to this proposed solution. That's the current design as well. That there isn't a if you're doing your day-aheads and using the unspecified source, then you've got an obligation to the unspecified source, regardless of what the EIM redispatch is as a result. Because that day-ahead import is deemed delivered in the real time, and that megawatt quantity is what has a compliance obligation outside of the completely outside of the EIM.
It does, but it goes as an unspecified source. To your point, we don't report it on a resource-specific basis.
Right.
So what
we do that in EIM?
Right.
How
that doesn't
establish
change.
That, I guess.
Yeah, that doesn't change. The import that clears the day-ahead market could be from an unspecified source, and it has a responsibility as an unspecified source. What we're trying to do here is that when you come into the AEM now and you submit base schedules and you want to avoid the double counting of greenhouse gas responsibility, somehow you have to make an attribution of that unspecified day-ahead import where it comes from specific resource-based schedules now.
George, it might be helpful that we would have the same challenge. So we do understand the concern. And I think you said it well. Is I think all we're talking about is somehow, if you have 800 megawatts or 1,000 megawatts, whatever the number is of imports, allocating some of your base scheduled resources, which are already at a resource level, allocating some of them to supporting those so that they don't get double counted, and not over allocating them so that they're not unavailable to support EIM transfers from a GHG deeming perspective. So I think it might be a good conversation offline. I think we have the same challenge that we have system sales, we have specified, we could have unspecified. You have just have to find a way to somehow allocate the base schedules that you're already submitting and say which ones are supporting those so that you don't double count them through the EIM deeming mechanism.
Isn't there going to be a mismatch, though, between, because the unspecified source has a specific EIM emission profile, if you will, and so we don't, I mean, that resource does not technically exist on the system, and so you'd almost have to, like, perfectly figure out, you'd have to have the match Otherwise, your reporting obligation that you have at the IRB on a day-ahead basis has to match what you report in the EIM, or you'll have a disconnect there. And how would we possibly do that?
Not necessarily. Your greenhouse gas responsibility for the day-ahead import at the unspecified source is one thing. What you want to do is make sure that you don't incur a duplicate responsibility allocated now to your EIM participating resources. You want to designate these as California supply so that their base schedule or this new item that we are discussing here, the portion of the base schedule that supports this day-ahead import, does not get a duplicate responsibility.
Kevin Woodruff, consultant for TURN. If you could go back one slide, I've been listening to the discussion about what the first pass is, and talk about you doing this before including the ISO, yet it's not, and there's no ISO bubble there or arrows to it, yet you do have to account for the ISO in this first pass. And I mean, I've heard the discussion of California supply, the supply that has a contractual obligation, and some discussion of exports and such, which I've written down and can listen to. I'm not going to try to repeat it, but does this really communicate the scope of this optimization, or do you have kind of like a dotted line CalISO bubble that where you do take into factor a few things, and when you do this optimization? I'm questioning the communications here, sort of how you want to communicate this at a high level, and this looks like it might be a little simplistic.
So I would say it's simplistic because we're trying to make a very straightforward point.
Trying to make
that
it simple.
Independent of the ISO, the outside of the let's assume the ISO wasn't even in the EIM. This is what the economic dispatch would be, and so the question is then once you sort of put the ISO back into it. That is sort of the incremental, anything that changes from that level, you could say is the result of the ISO being in the EIM. But we do have, agreed, we could have wheels through imports into California, exports going to the EIMs and all of that. And so we could have left the bubbles on here of the ISO, and you'd have seen that there's no transfers occurring between the ISO and any of the EIM entities. You could add it in here, and we wouldn't have had any of the. All we would have had was a 200 megawatt transfer from Pace to PacWest in the first pass.
Okay.
So may I add?
Sure.
That yes, indeed, these examples are simplified. They're trying to convey the concept, right?
Right.
And as I mentioned earlier, from the first pass solution, we're not interested on how California resources are dispatched, or how imports or exports from California. At ISO scheduling points, right? This is irrelevant. What we're interested in is to find out the optimal dispatch of EIM resources. So that's why here in this figure, you know, the focus is on the EIM balancing
right.
authority errors. What happens at the ISO is not relevant for the first pass. We won't even look at it. It doesn't mean anything. What we're interested in is where EIM resources will be dispatched.
Okay.
Because that will give us the reference for the second pass. So that's why, in order to keep things simple, we didn't want to include the ISO in this figure, because we're focusing on what happens outside California in the first pass.
So is the ISO even in this first pass at all, in any form?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So it's there, but,
yes.
You don't, okay.
Yeah, you solved the entire problem. You solved
right.
the entire footprint, the entire market footprint. But what you retain is the optimal schedules for EIM resources.
Yeah.
The rest is not relevant.
Yeah, I just think when you communicate this to any sort of lay audience or even educated layman or folks like us, that you might want to like have a text box there or something, you know, just, I mean, there's sort of extended discussion we had here today on what actually happens is like a, you could shorten that discussion with some notes.
Yeah, perhaps your suggestion to include the ISO in a dotted outline will probably provide more clarity here.
Yeah, something, yeah, like I said, a dashed line oval or maybe just a text box with, you know, just to make, anyway, just a suggestion. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Weather from MSU. Just wanted to confirm my understanding on some discussions earlier. So Georgia, you said in the second pass, you could have net transfer into the CAISO, and only then net transfer will be deemed as JGR allocation.
Correct. There is a constraint that forces complete allocation of net imports, net import transfers to California, to resources that have greenhouse gas bids.
Same constraint we currently have in the market.
Right, I understand it. So the question is it possible then the net transfer into the CAISO, like a net import, net EIM import, will be greater than the total megawatt increase for the resource, only see the incremental dispatch from the first pass to the second pass?
No. No, that constraint that forces full allocation, it will prevent imports to California if you have no allocation base for them. So let's say that no EIM resource submits a greenhouse gas bid. There will be no imports in California in the optimal solution.
Okay, I was thinking more about it, but I think the concern is whether they will restrict imports in the CAISO if you want to limit that.
Well, if EIM participating resources do not want to get exposed to greenhouse gas regulations in California and they don't want to serve California load, the optimization will comply.
Yeah, but my question is really on the resources that then both bid the GHG bids and also see the incremental dispatch from the first pass to the second pass. So even you may have enough or sufficient GHG bids, the resource for that, but you may not have enough megawatt increase or incremental dispatch from first pass to second pass on those resources. That's the question.
Oh, yeah. You're saying we have sufficient greenhouse gas bids, but only a portion of all that capacity clears as net transfer import to California. That's the optimal solution. It means that the rest of it is not competitive, and California resources are more competitive for serving California load. That's the optimal solution.
Sorry, just one more time. So I'm talking about, say, for example, you have a 10, just simple example, if you have 10 EIM resources, all of them bid GHG, and willing to provide energy to serve California if it's economic. And then if only five of them seen the incremental dispatch from the first path to the second path, and then the net import from EIM to the CAISO will be only allocated or attributed to these five resources that see incremental dispatch.
Yes, it can only be attributed to resources with a greenhouse gas bid that have incremental dispatch from the greenhouse gas reference point.
From the first pass.
Yeah, so
you've limited the sphere of resources or the universe of your resources that could be attributed to California. You started with 10. The first pass says five of them are no longer have any headroom on them to now come to California because they're serving non-California load.
Well, in my example, you could have all 10 being dispatched in both the first pass and the second pass, but only five of them seeing the incremental dispatch from the first pass to the second pass.
Right. Well, the key is that incremental dispatch from the first pass to the second pass has to be to support a transfer into EIM transfer into California because we've already met the load outside of California in the first pass.
That's exactly the question. Is that true? Maybe you have a congestion management needs. It may not be all the incremental dispatch from all these five resources to the CAISO.
That's why I mentioned there could be offsetting incremental and decremental congestion management in the second pass. Only the net out of that is imported to California receives an allocation. And the allocation is only given competitively to resources with greenhouse gas bids and incremental dispatch from the reference. So in your example, let's say you have two resources, two EIM resources, okay? and let's say they have a base schedule of 100 megawatts each, okay? And let's say in the first dispatch, in the first pass, these are not dispatched above the base. They stay at their base, okay? So the reference is the base. And we go in the second pass, all right? And because of congestion management that materializes in the second pass, let's say one resource goes up from 100 to, let's say, 160, and the other resource needs to go down to, let's say, 80, the net increase of 40 megawatts obviously is an import transfer to California, right? Where is the energy going to go? It's going to go to California. So that 40 megawatts will get an attribution. That attribution can only go to the resource that has an incremental dispatch. So out of the 60 megawatt of incremental dispatch for that resource that was incrementally dispatched, 40 megawatts will get a greenhouse gas allocation, saying that 40 megawatts out of that 60 megawatt dispatch, incremental dispatch, serves California load. The other 20 megawatts is offsetting the 20 megawatts decremental on the other resource because of congestion management. Is that clear now? Both things happen at the same time.
Thank you. I think I understand the math, but I'm not sure about the outcome. But anyway, thanks.
Oh. Hi, this is Mike Castellano, DMM. I think an important point on Wei's question is to think about what can actually change between the first pass and the second pass. I have actually spent a decent amount of time over the past couple of weeks thinking about this. And the main incident in which I've seen that there could be a concern would be extremely short term, and it would be if a resource, because the plan is to not do a commitment, a full unit commitment in the first pass, if a resource was committed in the second pass, and it turns out, I think it has to be a resource, if a resource gets committed in the second pass that does not want to provide supply to California, that could cause, it could sort of force decremental dispatch of other resources that would be willing to supply California. And kind of it may, in that one interval, limit the supply to California. But by the next interval, that commitment would be included in the initial, in the GHG reference base, I guess is what we're calling it, right?
Yeah. Mike, what you're describing is something that can happen anyway, even if you didn't have California into the picture. You have to commit a resource for congestion management, and then you have to decrement the resources to balance that out. Now, this happens in conjunction with the optimal allocation of inputs to California for serving California loads. So this can happen concurrently. In the example that I gave, you have the phenomenon of incremental dispatch to serve California load and incremental dispatch that offsets decremental dispatch for congestion management. Now, that incremental dispatch could be because of commitment, but it doesn't fundamentally change the issue here, that those two things happen at the same time. They're co-optimized. You solve the entire problem.
Yeah, Dan from Portland General. So just kind of recognizing that we could run all day with what if and scenarios, is there time in the process for us to submit or send over some examples that might be commercially sensitive that we don't necessarily want to run through the what ifs on publicly and get some feedback on it? Probably have 5 or 10 different permutations where you could go, well, in that case it would be this, and in that case it would be that.
That's fine. Feel free to reach out to me.
I'd like to add that we have made available an Excel spreadsheet tool which can be used to examine scenarios like what you're thinking. So it could provide some value to you to see how things will play out by playing around with bids and...
Specifically for us, I think it's the questions about the forward market activity and then rolling from that into EIM and trying to keep separate the day ahead and HASP and FMM intertie stuff from EIM and just figure out, make sure we have a good idea. It's probably, none of it's probably a problem. It's just, it's hard to talk through.
There you go, Kevin Woodruff. You talked about the example you gave just a few minutes ago about, you know, two resources in the first pass having 100 megawatt schedules, and the second pass one has 80 and one has 160 for a net of 40. The GHG contributions, you, in that case, you attribute to the 40 megawatts of the 60 megawatt. You don't net the two, the, like the minus 20 or the...
No, it's resource specific.
So it's resource specific. So like if a unit goes from 100 down to 80 because of California and its GHGs go down, that gets lost, or?
No, it simply doesn't get an attribution because we only attribute to incremental distance.
Incremental, okay. And so the impact of decremental is law. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to move ahead. We're getting close to the noon hour, and I think I can blow through some the remaining slides around sort of the two-path solution, and then we can talk about it in the afternoon in more detail, the whole concept of California supply. So I think we've already hit on this, and I think everyone's sort of in agreement on this, is that these base schedules, you can't assume they're optimal beforehand. The two examples showed that. So you can have redispatch occur to resolve economically or congestion independent of meeting a transfer to the ISO. And then the key is if a resource was dispatched down, then any upward dispatch on that can't be considered secondary dispatch to serve California load. And that atmospheric effect is really from, should be measured from what the resource would have been dispatched at to serve non-California load.
So the two-path solution. So again, the first thing we do is in the second pass, we've introduced a new constraint that says that the GHG award can only be only be attributed to incremental dispatches above the GHG allocation base. Currently, any dispatch above zero can be attributed to California. So we've, in essence, limited the pool of the amount of EIM participating resources that can be attributed to California, recognizing that we don't want to create secondary dispatch. We aren't using the base schedules in the optimization, except for recognizing that to avoid the double counting of California supply, that we would want to ensure any dispatch is incremental to the base. We need to have the two-step process. The first one is where you optimize schedules outside of California without the transfers occurring. We accomplish that by setting the GHG bids to zero, megawatt bids to zero. After we get that point, we then optimize the transfers, allowing transfers into California by putting those GHG bids into the optimization and dispatching just as we do today. Now, we need to recognize that the primary purpose of the real-time dispatch and the 15-minute run the real-time unit commitment process is to reliably operate the grid. We didn't design it to do accounting purposes for GHG, so we need to recognize that, and that we need to be able to solve this solution every 5 minutes. And as a result, we want to make simplifying assumptions in that first pass, because again, we're just trying to get an appropriate reference point that reflects how the resources would optimally serve load outside of California, and then allow the transfers into the ISO. We would note that this is a significant improvement over the current design. I think it addresses the secondary dispatch. It also addresses the potential of double counting in terms of allocating to the base schedule that was previously a specified source in the day-ahead time frame. So we are going to make simplifying assumptions in that first pass, and we can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And I would note that this is the primary purpose of the report that we'll be putting out at the end of this year, to where we're going to look at how is the accuracy
using the two-path solution relative to what the perfect solution would have been so that we can get an idea of how accurate we are. And then George already highlighted this previously, that we did put out an Excel spreadsheet. We walked through it in quite a bit of detail in our last meeting, which was recorded, so people can actually go back and listen to that. And it is available on our website still, so feel free to access that. And with that, that sort of wraps up the two-path solution. I'll see if there's any questions here, and then in the afternoon we can talk about California supply in more detail. Let's just do it at 1.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and take a lunch break. We'll come back. We'll restart the conversation about 1 o'clock. So we'll see you back in about an hour and 15 minutes.
Okay, go ahead. Okay, good afternoon, everybody. We'll walk through the last part of this where we really wanted to talk a little bit more about California supply and why you needed to introduce this concept. And the question really comes down to how should you treat an external resource that's been contracted or built or is there with the intent of serving California load? And the first example, and then we've highlighted this in the paper, is really around a renewable resource. So we would want to incentivize California resources to be contracting with external renewable resources. But if we didn't treat their GHG allocation base a little differently, then California load actually wouldn't be able to benefit from the fact that they procured a low-emitting resource. So in this scenario, let's assume that a California load-serving entity is contracted with a RIN resource out of California, so in Oregon in this example. It's got a zero marginal cost, so it bids $0 for its energy. We know that it has if it can identify a GHG bid adder to allow it to be attributed for delivery to California, it would also bid 0 megawatts because there is no GHG cost. So if you did the first pass, you could see that the Oregon resource would always be dispatched up to its forecasted output because it's always cheaper than or any resource that has a fuel cost. And so in this scenario, we would back down a external gas resource in the first pass and schedule the wind resource at its full output and set its full output, full GHG allocation base equal to that first pass solution. Now when we move to the second pass, remember we add the constraint that at a resource level you can only be attributed to serving California if you're dispatched in above your first pass reference level. The forecast has not changed on this resource, so it doesn't have any capability to support an incremental transfer. So the only resource in this scenario that could support it would be the gas unit. And as a result, California load, although they contracted with a non-emitting resource, basically incurred a greenhouse gas expense. So we need to treat these resources differently than other external resources because they've been procured to serve California load. And so I'll go through an example upcoming, but we have the way that we want to identify these resources that we allow on an hourly basis for the scheduling coordinator to select a flag to say this resource is California supply. Just like any other EIM participating resource, it always bids a separate GHG bid adder in the event that it wants to be delivered to California. In this case, it absolutely does, so you would expect it to submit a GHG bid adder at its total output or its nameplate capacity. And then when we do the first pass, we ensure that this resource can be delivered to California, which means that we set its GHG allocation base to its base schedule, which addresses that double accounting issue because we assume that the resource, since it is California supply, any day-ahead schedule it has to import power to California is in that base schedule of the resource. So with that, let's go through an example. And I would note that in my example, I have G1 being a non-emitting resource, but this scenario works whether it's emitting or non-emitting. The key is that if you don't allow, for instance, if there's cheaper California supply outside of California, you can have the same phenomenon. So this isn't just isolated to non-emitting resources. Both can impact the price that California load pays. So we've modified this scenario a little bit, but it's the same one that we've done before. So we are seeing that G1 is a cheap, low-emitting resource, or zero-emitting resource. It does have additional headroom, so you can see its base schedule. It's only scheduled at 100. It could go up to 200 megawatts. And then the maximum amount that we can reduce supply in the ISO is 100 megawatts. That's a little change to the scenario from what we've done previously. It used to be 200. But let's see what the market would do. And when we first do this, let's perform the first pass and don't assume that it's California supply. So basically do our two-path solution, but don't introduce the new concept of California supply. So we can see that G1 is cheaper than G3 from an energy standpoint. So we schedule G1 up to its maximum output. We take G3 down to zero. G3 is the marginal resource, and energy price is $30, and there is no GHG price because there's no transfers to California. So this all makes perfect economic sense. So now when we hold the reference level for the second pass equal to this solution, we can see that G1 doesn't have any ability to be increased from its GHG allocation base. So the only resource that is now can support the transfer into California is G3. It's dispatched now back up to 100 megawatts. The energy price is $36, and the GHG price is now $6. So California load is paying, from an LMP standpoint, is paying $36, and the price of load outside of California remains $30. But the question becomes, why should California load have to pay $36 to serve its imbalance when it actually contracted with G1? And if it had and since it contracted with G1, shouldn't it get the benefits of the overall lower energy price that that would have caused? Okay, any questions on why this is the solution here? Okay, we'll go to the phone.
Lauren will take the question on the phone.
Hi, Don. It's Mark Lamont Powers. I think I understand what you're achieving here, which is effectively, in this example, a California renewable, because it's got a low marginal cost and pass one doesn't allow EIM transfers net into California to serve load, you don't want it to be always picked up to serve load outside, given that California LSEs have effectively funded that plant existing in the first place, and they should get the benefit of that clean production and not be deemed to have it, say, come from a gas plant because that mm-hmm. the renewables deemed to serve outside. I guess a couple thoughts. One is that just concern around the earlier slide that an SC can select the California supply flag. I think this may be workable for California renewables, but I'm concerned about the ability to just have an open framework to select the flag. If we change that from a California renewable to, say, a hydro plant that is not contracted long-term to California, it has maybe 100 megawatts going to California in the day-ahead market, so it has a base schedule of 100 megawatts, I'm worried if the flag got checked here for it, it might be a low-cost resource. It should appropriately be deemed to serve load outside, but if the flag was checked, it could now be inked in the EIM, deemed to serve California, even though it would have ran anyways to serve load outside. So just some questions around if you're going with this approach, making sure that flag is truly limited for this special treatment to resources that were actually funded by LSEs and exist because of LSE investment, and so they appropriately get the benefit, not just an open, you can check any flag, and now the clean resources are bypassing that first pass effectively and being saved to be deemed to go to California.
So, Mark, I would highlight that this isn't just specific for clean resources. So we can't have that as a criteria for what who can select it. You could theoretically have a load serving entity who inside California who underscheduled in day ahead, go look to procure supply in the real time. They don't want to self-schedule it in the HASS process, but rather have it economically participate. And I think on that, you can see load serving entities contracting on an hourly basis to make that sort of supply. And so I wouldn't want to force them into a self-scheduling of that supply when I could provide them the opportunity to economically bid it and still protect them in terms of that supply is available to serve California load if it's more economic to do so before I allow it to go serve non-California load.
I think the concern there, Don, is that if that resource is not a renewable resource or a long-term resource adequacy resource, if that wasn't contracted by that LLC and that resource was economic, it would have served load outside anyways. And so I'm just worried that we're creating, and I'm not saying it's just clean resources, I'm saying if you're going to allow a special treatment for resources to bypass effectively pass one, I think it needs to be limited to resources that are only running because of that California investment. And I think if you just allow any resource to check the flag, I think you're setting up some outcomes here where a resource would have run anyways. If flags start getting checked for all clean resources, they're going to bypass the first optimization. They're going to get deemed to go to California when they would have really ran anyways to serve load outside. So I think the concept makes sense for renewables, potentially for RA resources. I'm struggling a little bit with that being an hourly flag to be able to bypass when it perhaps would have ran anyways to serve load outside.
And I think, Mark, the thing that we're talking a little bit past each other is, if you think about the scenario I just described, it's not that the resource would have run anyways. It potentially could have been a non-participating resource and wouldn't have even economically bid in the EIM. And so the key is the fact that I am now procuring from that resource as a California load serving entity on an hourly basis and saying, I don't want to just simply self-schedule your output, I want to economically bid it. I have to give them flexibility because they may on a short-term basis not just procure from their RA resources. They may need the ability to go procure from somebody on a pure hour-ahead spot basis. And we would want them to now, at that EIM participating resource, to submit bids, not simply be a non-participating resource.
So I see that California LSEs could procure supply, deliver it in the day-ahead and real-time market as an hourly, and they already have a framework for that. I think what you're describing is a California LSE having a resource outside that wouldn't run but for its ability to submit a bid into the EIM. I guess if that's the scenario, how do we narrow the criteria to that scenario? And I'm just going by the paper and the slides. It just seems like it was a wide open flag that could be checked, even if it was a resource in an EIM area, that EIM entity BA, where it is a resource that could have ran anyways to serve load outside. It gets checked the flag, and now it gets a special treatment. So I think we're really on a narrow point here, but I think an important one in terms of what qualifies to be able to check that flag.
And I think we didn't want to get in the position of validating that. We expect that the scheduling coordinator would be reflecting that they have some arrangements to serve California load and the and if we needed to add, I mean, the key is you're only an EIM participating resource can get this, which means it's only ones that are economically bidding. So I think it sort of naturally has isolated itself to that specific scenario I said, which is an EIM participating resource where it's contracted with a load serving entity and it wants to economically bid.
Is it limited to resource output that is contracted with a load serving entity? I'm just trying to draw the other side, Don, which is, let's say you've got a BA that's got 5,000 megs of generation, 4,000 is emitting, 1,000 is non-emitting, and the 1,000 megawatts all checks the flag and there is no contract with the LSC, won't that just all bypass the first pass and be there to be deemed, even though it would have ran anyways in the first pass? So just, and again, we can take it offline or put in our comments, but just some more discussion or thought around what qualifies to check the flag.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, thanks.
But I do want to highlight, I think you need to have the ability, it's not just renewables that check the flag, because again, we could do a scenario here where they're both emitting resources, they both have the same GHG cost, but one was willing to sell at a lower price than the other, and let's say that lower priced resource contracted with the California LSE, you wouldn't want that to be able to go to non-California first.
Yeah, and I accept your point. I think the key for me, as I think about it, is that I think it needs to be, if that output is only running because it's being imported to California, then it needs to fall under this exception, which I think makes sense. But if that output would have ran anyways without the import to California, then it shouldn't be able to fall into this exception. And so it's
okay.
Just a matter of how do you... So I agree with you. It may not just be a renewable resource. It may be a non-renewable resource where someone's bought the output of, say, dispatchable hydro or pump storage or whatever you want to look at, and they want to make sure that they can make that eligible to California because it's a California LLC that's invested in it, or it's only going to run if it's able to be deemed to go to California. Then I think that makes sense. But I think when you start expanding beyond that and leaving it wide open, I just think there's a potential on the other side that everything suddenly that's non-emitting could check the flag, and now we're not getting resources that would have ran anyways into that pass one to be deemed to serve load outside.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just a matter of getting that criteria right.
Okay. So I want to move to the next slide, because let's show what the example, what the results would have been had we actually done the California supply approach. So again, the second pass here, we would now say that G1, as long as it's dispatched above its base schedule of 100 megawatts, then it's okay to be deemed delivered to California. We see that G3 still remains dispatched at zero, and the incremental 100 is identified as coming from PacWest and from G1, and that now the price is set at $30 with the GHG price being zero. And so this, in this scenario now, the LMP inside California is $30, which means that they have benefited, and we've provided the correct incentive. By procuring a non-emitting resource, they're still able to have that reflected in the LMPs. And the LMP outside of California, again, remains unchanged. Yes.
On this example, on slide 29, what is the, is this a precursor for, or is this like a direct follow-on from slide 26, or did you mean?
So it's a direct, so when we did slide, it's basically I just jumped to the second pass.
Okay.
And then put in, if you look at the reference points, which the allocation that where I go, it can go from 100 to 200.
Right. Right.
So I just updated the reference points with what the first pass solution would be if you were treated this as California supply. So you can see the previous one treated it as 200 megawatts.
Right.
Previous slide. Now it's at 100, and since I now have upward capability on it from an attribution standpoint, I can attribute it to G1, to where I was previously not allowed to.
Okay. But just looking at like the, I'm not quite sure I followed your explanation there. So slide 26 is sort of a statement of there are no flows. It's more like setting it.
Okay. Yeah, so slide 26 is the starting point.
Starting point.
Correct. And then if you looked at slide 27, that's sort of the calculating the GHG allocation base for non-California supply.
Okay, so that's like you have your base schedules, then you do your pass one.
Right.
And then pass two is the next slide.
And then pass two, I skip the next slide and do pass two with it as California supply.
Oh, okay. So what is slide 28? That's the performance second from...
Slide 28 was the current solution if we didn't introduce California supply.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yep. Paul.
Paul Grivick, PG&E. I think there's a problem with the exception. See, I think there's a problem with this. I think there's a problem with this example. You're no longer satisfying your power balance. I think the G3 has to go to 100. It's just that you're going to impute the import to G1. Yeah, G1's going from 100 to 200. G3 is staying at zero. If you look, your total
G in the pace balancing authority area should have been at 4,300. I didn't carry that forward from the previous example.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
So
it would have to be 4,500 because your load is higher than your generation now. Because in PacWest, your load is 2,000, your total generation is 2,000. Yeah. PacEast, your load is 4,400, your generation is 4,500.
No, so there's two errors on this slide, Paul. The G in pace should have been 4,300, and the G3 should go 0 to 100. So we can update that. And that's why the price is still 30. I love doing these simple examples, Paul, because you get to point out every single time the... All right. You can tell I was looking forward to a long four-day weekend when I was putting this together. Are there any additional questions on the California supply? Okay. So moving ahead, so one thing we had talked about previously was potentially the need for a bridge solution since we don't have the ability to implement this in time for the 2018 compliance period, which is the start of ARB's new regulation. So they have developed a bridge solution that allows us to work on getting this in place that they can then use basically the current attribution methodology, and they'll retire the difference between the unspecified rate and whatever has been attributed through the EIM, and they will do that out of their reserves that they keep from the auction. So that gives us time until we actually can implement this. As I said, we're currently planning to implement it in the software this year, perform our reports and testing of the software and providing that report the end of this year, then seeking board approval, aligning things up with CARB's process, which would put us online of putting this in place for the 2019 compliance year, which means we'd have a bridge solution of 1 to 2 years to make that possible. Question in the room.
Kevin Woodruff again. First bullet here, ARB will retire allowances for the difference between the unspecified rate applied to EIM transfers and the ISO, and EIM transfers is a number you can get easily, and the unspecified rate is a given.
Yep.
What is the attributed emission determined through the market optimization?
So that would be the sum of who we attributed the GHG awards to.
In which?
So right now we give the resource-specific awards to the EIM participating resources. That gives them a reporting obligation to CARB.
Okay.
They then go report, and then the difference between those two.
So it's based on the current.
Yep.
Okay. That's. I just wanted to double clarify that. Thank you.
Okay. So next, when we've talked about this before, that we are looking to minimize the solve time of the first pass, and George has actually already addressed these earlier today in terms of what we're looking to do in that first pass. The first is the unit commitment. We'll actually pull that from the previous market run and use that in the first pass. And then in the second pass is where you determine the financially binding unit commitment that will be used in the next time we do this again.
The FMM, we'll pull it from the market power mitigation pass.
Oh, okay.
So we don't have to go to the previous run. So it's the same run, but the market power mitigation pass that has full unit commitment. So we won't need to repeat that for the first pass.
Okay. Thanks, George. And then the next is around the ramp constraints that we would then be able to relax. And George, I don't know if you want to go into more on that one.
Yeah, so performance-wise, the dynamic ramp rate constraints that we have in the market are one of the most expensive features in terms of performance. And looking into simplification options for the first pass, that was our first target, that we could relax the ramp rate constraints. As it turns out, the discussions that we had with our vendor, we're fortunate in that respect that we can actually, it looks like we will meet performance requirements having these constraints in place. But there is another reason why we may want to relax them, and that is feasibility. Because in real time, we initialize the problem from the state estimator solution, and when we are in the real time unit commitment application, we initialize from the last real time dispatch solution that we have, and that is the full market solution, in which you don't have any restriction on the transfers. The transfers between control areas are calculated optimally. So now, starting from this initial point, for the first pass, and the first pass having a big restriction on the imports into California, may result in an infeasible problem. And for example, if we have in the last optimal solution for the market a large amount of imports coming into California, trying to start from this point and find an optimal solution where you have no transfers into California, you may be looking at thousands of megawatts that you may need to redistribute among resources. And if you have ramp constraints, you may not have enough flexibility to find an optimal solution. So for this reason alone, we're proposing to have the ramp rate constraints in the first pass as soft constraints, so that in case that we don't have the necessary flexibility in the fleet of resources to find an optimal solution, those ramp constraints will be relaxed. So this is still one of the simplifications that we consider for the first pass.
Lauren, we'll take the question on the phone.
Caller, please go ahead. Your line has been unmuted.
Hi, George and Donna. It's Mark Coleman of PowerX again. I just want to make sure I understand this right, because I think this doesn't raise really a concern. As I think about it, pass one is really trying to establish the resources that would have ran anyways without EIM transfers to California. And if you had some errors in that calculation or some inaccuracies in that calculation, it's not going to be systemically biased in one direction or another as a result of having to do some simplifications for software. In other words, you're estimating as accurately as you can do with the computing power and other limitations you have what resources would have likely ran anyways to serve load outside California through the EIM optimized pass one. Sometimes that's going to be a little bit off in one direction, allowing some cleaner resources to be deemed to go to California than maybe it was fully accurate. But sometimes it's going to be off in the other direction, not allowing and maybe resulting in higher emitting resources being deemed to go to California than a perfectly accurate solution. So it seems like these errors are hopefully relatively minor, but also not biased in either direction. And I think that's helpful to say, hey, we're not perfectly accurate in any one interval, but we're fairly accurate, and on average, we should be accurate because these errors should over time cancel themselves out. Do I understand that correctly?
Yes, Mark, and I would like to provide a little bit more clarity on this. You're correct. There's no systematic bias in any direction. But I'd like to comment on what you're referring as errors. As you know, the first pass solution is really a fictional solution. What we're trying to find is a theoretical reference of how EIM resources would be dispatched optimally to serve non-California load. if we were solving this problem at one point in time, there wouldn't be a problem. That's a single solution, and we can enforce all the constraints, you know, performance requirements aside. The problem with the real-time market is that it's not a single solution in time. It's a number of solutions, one after the other, okay, every 5 and every 15 minutes we solve, and there has to be cohesion between the solution in the previous run and the solution in the next run, and they're connected with ramp rate constraints that they limit how much resources can be dispatched from one point in time to the next point in time that we dispatch. So because we're solving in the first pass a theoretical point, but we initialize from a market solution, and that first pass has a completely different problem formulation where we're enforcing a constraint that limits the transfers to California. And if you have existing transfers from the previous solution, now we have to cut them in the first pass to find that theoretical solution. Practically, the problem may become infeasible. You may not have enough flexibility in your fleet to find that solution. So there are necessities that we'll have to realize. We're not solving one point in time. It's a train of solutions. One depends on the previous solution, etc. So by the nature of the real-time market, we have to recognize the fact that the solution we're seeking in the first pass is not only approximate in that respect, but it's also theoretical. It may not exist in practice. So yeah, it gives us a reference, right? So we have to keep that in mind.
I think that's helpful, and like I said, without knowing the size of the errors, it conceptually doesn't trouble us because I think, like you said, it is a theoretical estimate of what the solution could be, a theoretical estimate of the solution without transfers to California. It may not be a feasible solution. It may be inaccurate relative to even if it was feasible. If you had perfect information, it could put all unit commitment and RAM constraints in, and you had a feasible solution, but as long as those inaccuracies seem to be like they'll be limited and that they will be random, then we don't have a systemic issue. I think it makes sense. I think you have to do what you need to do to get a feasible solution and to meet your computing time. I think if you have error in any given interval, I mean, we have error in the binding solution now because we don't have a perfect forecast of load or a perfect forecast of errors. I think as long as the errors are random, I don't see the issue with it. Thanks.
Thanks, Mark.
Just a quick clarification question. So here, when you constrain the net transfer to the California to be non-positive, you really mean the net EIM transfer. So you still allow the transfer into EIM from day-ahead imports in the first round.
Correct.
Okay. Thanks.
Did you mention day-ahead imports?
Yes.
Okay, that's different. So day-ahead imports have nothing to do with the transfers, okay? Day-ahead imports are because the day-ahead market doesn't have a solution for the EIM balancing authority areas, right? It's only for the ISO. So these day-ahead imports are at ISO scheduling points, and they're different from the concept of a transfer. Transfer is dynamic energy exchange in real time with the balancing authority areas in the EIM, in the EIM area. So they're different from the imports and exports that you could have cleared with the ISO market at ISO scheduling points. Different conduits, different energy.
Right, probably I mixed the terms, but I'm thinking like, for example, on a NOT, you know, on the same transmission corridor where you have EIM transfer capacity and also the generic import capacity.
So NOB is not a good example, but Malin is one because we don't have transfers at NOB. But we do have transfers at Malin, okay, through Malin, and imports exports to the ISO market at Malin. So that's an example that you could have two different conduits for two different types of energy, energy that is bid directly in the ISO market at the ISO scheduling point of Malin that has nothing to do with dynamic transfers at Malin that are coming from, let's say, PacWest to ISO. Now, we do have constraints at Malin that constrain the total schedule, both the imports and exports at Malin with the ISO market and the transfers with PacifiCorp. So we have a scheduling limit that schedules that limits both the transfer and the imports exports because they're really different. Okay?
So here the net transfer, the constraint you're talking about is only the EIM.
Correct. Okay. When we're talking about the net transfer, it's only the EIM transfer that does not include the imports exports to ISO at ISO scheduling points.
Only Got EIM it. Participating resources will use the EIM transfer capability.
Got it. Thanks.
Okay. So moving forward, I did want to highlight that we, I know everyone loves looking at our initiatives roadmap, but this is one that we've had on that we're looking to start this summer. And what we're going to do is make some enhancements to our real-time market, and primarily by integrating both the real-time unit commitment process, which is currently our 15-minute market, comes out of this process, and our 5-minute real-time dispatch. So rather than having a 15-minute process to do unit commitment and a 5-minute process to do dispatch, we're going to do it all simultaneously in the same real-time dispatch process. So that means we'll now move from 15-minute unit commitment to 5-minute unit commitment. We'll look at doing 5-minute ancillary services. We'll also be changing the EIM resource efficiency evaluation so that it's a 5-minute based test. And we also, which we implemented already in earlier this year, is doing market power mitigation on a 5-minute basis. So I think what you can see from here is that we're adding more and more functionality to the 5-minute dispatch, including the GHG attribution first pass. And again, these changes that we're making to the real-time market here are significant advancements in improving the integration of renewables. For instance, think of you know, being able to commit with 5-minute granularity is a lot easier way to manage solar ramps than 15-minute granularity, for example. So you know, we are developing this two-pass solution. We are being mindful of that in 2019 we're looking to make this significant change.
Kevin Woodruff. As someone who doesn't work with the market every day, are all these 5 minutes, are those all now done in 15-minute horizons?
The currently unit commitments done on a 15-minute basis, and certainly services procurement is done on a 15-minute basis, and our resource efficiency evaluation is done in the real-time unit commitment market, so it's on a 15-minute basis as well.
But that one we do it ahead of time. Before
right.
the hour starts.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. So in terms of next steps, we are asking for stakeholder comments on June 14th. We will be briefing both the board and the governing body, so that where it says Board of Governors decision, that's actually a briefing, to update them on the stakeholder process, the comments to date, to inform them that we're investing in developing the two-path solution so that we can actually generate a report that we can provide back to them. And given the high-profile nature of this, just to keep them up to speed in terms of where we're at in the process, we then will be generating a report on the attribution accuracy in the late part of this year, Q4. Which then will inform us, we'll have a stakeholder meeting around that, and then that will inform our decision process to go to the board in early 2018.
I think this might be a bad question now that I just looked at the implementation, but I was going to ask if you're going to do that study in the context of the 5-minute enhancements or if...
Well, we're going to do it in both the 15-minute and the 5, but
okay.
We already have the 5.
Because now I see it's... Well, this will be implemented before the real-time market enhancement.
Correct.
Is implemented, so.
Christine.
Hi, Chris Kirsten with PacifiCorp. I was just wondering, so with the timing of implementation and the Board of Governors decision, once the Board of Governors gives it the okay, in Q1 of 2018. How is that going to be coordinated with the ARB rules?
So our hope is that once we've received board approval, that they would be willing to move forward making proposing any changes they need to reflect, for instance, the California supply and the two-pass solution in their process, so that their process could go along and we could be ready to turn it on start of 2019.
So you're saying that the ARB process would go on while you guys are testing and
finalizing
going through your implementation
stuff?
Finalizing,
making our FERC filings, so
yeah.
All of that.
Okay, great.
Great, so thank you everybody for joining us today. We are going to update the slides based on the feedback that you received, and we'll repost those, so look for those by the end of this week. And we also did record the meeting today, so if you want to go back and revisit the discussion, we're going to make that recording available on the initiative webpage. So that should be probably end of this week or early next week. So thank you all. We really appreciate your feedback today, and we look forward to your written comments on June 14th.